This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. They offer just about every battery under the sun, from car and truck batteries to batteries for your trail cameras and rangefinders. Select retail locations even offer cell phone repair and cracked screen repair. Find a local retail location at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. Welcome back, everybody. Hopefully everybody's having a great week. I know that I've been playing daddy daycare quite a bit this week, and there's going to be this small period between the time that school gets out and my youngest gets into his summer daycare / preschool program, where I might as well just call myself a babysitter. And I know that people are like, well, you should never call yourself a babysitter when you raise your own kids. But that's definitely what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be watching my kids from the time they get up in the morning. You know, my wife, now that COVID is over, is going to be called back into work, which sucks the biggest balls, because now that kind of throws a wrench into everything that I thought I had planned for this summer. The two older kids, they can take care of themselves for the most part, but it just kind of, my Mondays and Tuesdays are, I won't be able to record any episodes. Basically, I'm going to be able to do some work, but not till late at night, which whatever, I guess. You know, when life throws you curveballs, you know, you just got to swing for the fences and hope it's a home run, I guess. I don't know if that's probably a terrible analogy. But anyway, things just got a little bit more complicated, but they've always been complicated. You know, anybody with 3 kids or kids in general, that right there is, I don't know, that's the curveball of life. They're throwing you curveballs every day. Here's a funny story, actually. I'm sitting here. Feeding my kids supper, and you know, my one kid's like, hey dad, I don't want to eat my vegetables. And I'm, you know, in a very polite way, I say, tough shit, you have to eat your vegetables. Okay, I'll eat my vegetables. He eats his vegetables. Now he gets to, because he ate his vegetables, he cleaned his plate, he gets to go play Nintendo. And my other kid, he's sitting there and he eats his corn dogs, his mini corn dogs, because, you know, dad's We're on a time crunch tonight. And then he goes, oh, Dad, my tummy hurts. And I think it's a, dude, like, don't throw the tummy hurts card at me because I know you're faking it. Just eat your vegetables. So I'm sitting there just making him sit and eat his vegetables. And he starts to cry a little bit. And then he starts to gag. And wouldn't you know, he threw up in the toilet. And now he's back to normal and he's happy again. And I don't know. Like, that is the kind of shit that I have to deal with on a daily basis. I guess he made it to the toilet, which is a big win. And there's really no feces involved in this story. So that's also a win. But that is my life. Is feces, vomit, and just like dirtiness all the time. But I'm used to that. I'm used to that. So back to hunting now. We have a really good episode. Again, man, so recently I've just been reaching out to people on Instagram, and I'm just like, hey, anybody, I don't care who you are. If you love to hunt deer, or if you love to hunt in general, let's talk about it on the podcast. And this guy, Danny Thompson, hit me up and he's like, hey man, if you don't have a guest, I'd be more than happy to hop on. And I'm like, hell yeah, let's do it. And that's what this episode is, man. And you can tell in this conversation that we have, the title, you know, For the Love of Whitetails, is just this 365-day, man, obsession or passion. I really don't even know what to call it, but it's something, right? And we all have it. And we all get really fired up and jacked up about it. And our life revolves around it, you know, family and whitetails and all this stuff. And today, on today's episode, man, we kind of get into tradition. He's from Minnesota, and I look at Minnesota as a good tradition state. He talks about how they're, he kind of feels there is a decline in the tradition of hunting camps and bringing people together, and that the big buck craze might have something to do with that. We also talk about, you know, buying land for the first time, because that's something that I'm interested in. You know, that's on my mind all the time. And we share a couple war stories about three-wheelers, because he likes three-wheelers, and I have a couple war stories about three-wheelers that I share. But it's an overall, so really, it's a really good episode, man. I enjoy these kind of conversations. A lot of whitetail talk, a lot of BS, and that's what makes a good podcast, if you ask me. So, but you know, we got a whore out here real quick, and we're gonna do a couple commercials. OzonixHunting.com. OzonixHunting.com. Check out their website. There is a ton of information about using ozone both in and out of the field, out of the tree stand or ground blind. I'm telling you right now, it works in the tree stand, but the functionality outside of the tree, in their dry wash bag or their new closet, is a big deal, right? I mean, it cleans your clothes without having to wash your clothes. It, as far as scent is concerned, in the tree, the way this unit works and how it casts ozone down your scent stream is in the reaction that you get from deer is something that you have to witness, right? You have to see it. So if you think it's too expensive, find one from a friend, borrow it, get that aha moment that you need, and then come and pick it up. And I'm telling you right now, ozone has allowed me, you know, using an Ozonix has allowed me to really be aggressive in my tree stand placements, because if the wind is out of line just maybe a little bit, there's not as big as an impact as if I didn't have ozone in the tree with me. So like I said, for more information, visit OzonixHunting.com. Check out all the units that they have there. And if you do decide to purchase a unit, enter the discount code NFC21, NFC21, and you're going to get a free dry wash bag with the purchase of one of their units. And I believe that's like a $200 value. So that's a big deal. Other than that, we got, what's the next one? Exodus Trail Cameras. You know, we're bringing Old Faithful company back as a returning partner. You know, I've been down with Exodus Outdoor Gear since day one, and their trail cameras. And I say this, and you may think this is a simple out on how to on a, how to promote a trail camera company. But if you've ever had problems with trail cameras before, I'm telling you right now, this next statement will make sense. And that is, when I turn on the camera, it works. And that, my friend, makes me very happy. I know that when I walk away from that trail camera, it's going to work. It's going to capture the pictures, because absolutely nothing pisses me off more than not having a trail camera that captures pictures, whether it's gone for a week or worse yet, 2 months, and you come back and there's no pictures on it. You want to see a grown man get really pissed. There's that. Now, these guys are going through their sixth year, and you know, they're 6 years old. Great company, great products. Go to ExodusOutdoorGear.com. Check out their full lineup. And when you from now until June 11th, they're having a special. They call it their year six sale, which is their anniversary sale. Enter the discount code YEAR6, so year six, and save 20% off the Exodus Render, which is their cell cam, the SP18, which is their solar panel, and then they also have a combo kit that's for sale too. So you can save 20% off those three SKUs. That's a big deal. Take advantage of that. And by the way, their cell cam might be one of the fastest in the game when it comes to from the time the picture's taken to the time that it is sent to your phone. So I want to say like under 30 seconds, for sure under a minute. I'm going to find out more information about that, but it is fast, and that gives you almost real-time data. So take that how you want it. ExodusOutdoorGear.com. Lastly, Lone Wolf Tree Stands. I'm going to keep this one short because you know how much I love this. I mean, these guys have been a partner now for like going on 3 years, and there is no other tree stand I would rather be rocking come the run and gun rut, other than Four Sticks in an Assault. And you know, they have an Alpha, which has a bigger platform. They got climbers, but the four climbing sticks and the Assault gets me in any tree in any location that I need to hunt. And I'm telling you right now, it is like an appendage. It's a fourth, or it'd be a fifth appendage, right? Especially during this learning curve, right? It's a short learning curve. You get up. Now it's taken me 5 minutes to get up, hunt, tear down, you know, next day, new place, next day, new place, new tree, new tree, new tree. And that's how you're being a mobile hunter. And mobile hunters, as we all say, first time in, best time in. And I get that done with a Lone Wolf. Now, if you want to save $50 on all purchases over $200, that's roughly a savings that's 18 to 25%. Enter the discount code 9FC21, 9FC21, and you're going to save $50 off of all purchases over $200. That's a huge discount. That's way cheaper than any retail store you're going to get at any retail store. So take advantage of that. And that's the commercials for today. Thanks for listening to those, because it's important to me that you guys hear these commercials, because not only are we making, you know, we got a lot of good offers here, but all these companies are supporting me. That allows me to do this and listen to, you know, listen to all the content that's coming out of this Nine Finger Camp. So appreciate it. And they feed my family too, which is another big bonus. And I get to do what I love, which is another big bonus. So there's that. I'm kind of stuttering today. So let's just get into today's episode with Danny Thompson of Minnesota. 3, 2, 1. All right. On the phone with me today, Mr. Danny Thompson. Danny, how we doing, man?
Doing good. Doing good. Just up here doing some food plots and enjoying the summer heat finally.
Yeah, right. I think as Midwesterners, we sit here and we bitch and complain about how cold it is. And then, you know, if you don't hear us for a while, that must mean the weather's no humidity and, you know, in the 70s, like it has been the last couple, you know, handful of days. And now the heat's here, and now we're going to start bitching about the heat again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So let's kick it off like we always kick it off, and just ask you, where do you live, and what do you do for a living?
Yeah, so I live in Andover, Minnesota, which is just kind of central Minnesota, and I'm actually a regional sales manager for Garmin Marine, so I handle kind of the upper Midwest, the ice fishing stuff, and any of the marine sales we do up here.
Gotcha. So you work for the marine, I guess the quote-unquote fishing side of Garmin. Do you get to do a lot of fishing yourself?
Yeah, for sure. So obviously, you know, working in the fishing industry, there's a lot of events, a lot of on-the-water stuff. I'm getting ready to fly to the Bassmaster Classic next week and then follow that up with a week on the water on Leech Lake for the Reed's Father's Day Classic. So it just seems like I'm always on the water, always fishing, but it's, you know, it's one of those things. People always talk about how great your job is and you get to fish all the time, but sometimes, you know, when you do it for work, it doesn't make it as much fun, I guess.
Yeah. I remember back in the day when I used to hunt like 45, 50, whatever. I mean, just a ton, like almost every day in certain times. And I feel like if I was to do that now, I might get burnt out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's funny because like I meet a lot of the guys, even like let's say Bassmaster guys next week, and like guys like Jason Christie or Wade Middleton or some of these guys that they are known as professional fishermen and in the fishing industry like that, but they all are diehard deer hunters. And I think if you were to meet guys that are, you know, huge into deer hunting, a lot of times they absolutely are just eat up with fishing. So it's like you kind of you do what you love for a living, and sometimes it'll push you into another avenue. But I mean, at the end of the day, I go fishing for a living, so there's no complaints there.
Yeah. All right. So before we start talking about hunting, I want to talk about three-wheelers because dude, I have so many fun memories growing up as a kid riding three-wheelers around, and now I don't even know if they are allowed to make them anymore in the United States. I don't know if there's any laws prohibiting that, but I remember for a while, man, me and my buddy John, he lived out in the country just south of where I live, south of town, and we used to get that thing hauling ass, and we'd get in the ditch and then jump driveways with it, and we should probably be dead with all the dumb stuff that we've done on a three-wheeler.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's one of those things. I'm an 80s kid. Three-wheelers were around in the 80s. I love deer hunting, like fishing, love three-wheelers. It's just one of those things. And it's funny because with like COVID and with, you know, people my age starting to grow up, and you know, it's almost like, you know, my dad's generation, I feel like they all got old cars like Chevelles and Camaros and stuff. It seems like kids my age are buying three-wheelers because the market is insane right now. Like they're selling for three times what they were new back in the day. So
yeah,
it's funny.
So let me ask you this: why three-wheelers and not four-wheelers?
I think it's just part of it's cool. They're outlawed, they can't make them anymore. It's something from back in the day. I don't know. It's it's fun.
Yeah. What ended up doing that my buddy's three-wheeler in is we just jumped that driveway. You know, we would jump that driveway, land wrong, bounce off of it, and we're not, you know, I never used to wear a helmet on any of those things, roll off into the ditch, into the tall grass, shake it off, get back off, and try to do it again, right? And buddy's brother, he's older, and he's like, all right, I'm going to jump the longest. You guys have been jumping pretty long, but I'm giving it everything this time. And he comes and he lands real hard on it, and he didn't fall off, and we got all fired up, but he bent the back axle. So it was U'd. Oh. It was U'd. Oh my God. And his dad was so pissed at us. Once, you know, my buddy had to tell him what we were doing with it. He's like, are you kidding me? Like,
yep, exactly. Oh, they can definitely come back and bite you. There's a reason they're not allowed to be made anymore.
Right, man. I just saw that and I was like, a lot of memories of my buddy's house kind of popped up. And just fun times with three-wheelers, man.
Yeah.
All right. So Central Minnesota is where you that's where you were born and raised, right?
Yep.
Born and raised, that's where you're living now. Talk to me a little bit about I look at Minnesota and I feel I think Minnesota is one of those states with a really strong hunting tradition. What I mean by that is, you know, the hunt camps, the rifle opening day or rifle, everybody goes out and, you know, they go out and hunt in the morning, then they go eat breakfast, then they come back out and hunt in the afternoons, however many days the rifle season is, along with probably some bow hunting tradition as well. But that's my vision or my visual of Minnesota. Is that the same visual that you get?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, I think even just a lot of the states up by me, but Minnesota especially, it's like, that's exactly how it was growing up. You'd go to the deer camp with family members and friends and hang out by the fire in the old shack or a camp of some sort. There's a lot of state land in Minnesota, so a lot of times you're hunting state property. And it wasn't, like, growing literally until I probably was in college even or high school before I even shot, like, a nice racked buck. I mean, when I was younger, it was just like, if you seen a deer, it was exciting. And if you got a deer, it was exceptional. You know, you'd sit all season, 3 weekends of gun season, just trying to stay warm and see something. So, I mean, huge, huge tradition as far as that goes. And especially in my family with my grandpa and my dad and brother and everybody, that's just something we've always done and still continue to do. And I think a lot of times nowadays, with the way hunting's going nowadays, I think some of that's even getting lost. Like, people are, you know, we should get back to the roots of the camps and inviting the kids and the wives and the daughters and the friends and stuff like that, versus just worrying about, you know, the biggest buck on our property.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I feel it gets a little tricky, right? So the farm that I hunt is I have any type of access. Like, if I wanted to hunt, I could probably shotgun hunt in Iowa. I could probably do it. But there's other groups of guys who have been doing it for long periods of time, and they run it multiple times throughout first and second shotgun season in Iowa. And it's just, it would be overran if I tried to bring my family out there. And it's not like, it's not my farm, right? I can't do what I want to do on my farm and have kind of like a hunt camp or whatever. But with that said, I agree with you. Like, I feel that, like, for me, I would consider myself a solo hunter. I don't have a quote unquote deer camp where I'm going out and hunting the same piece of property with one of my buddies or something like that. We're not bouncing around. It's just kind of me. And maybe that's different because it's a bow hunting thing, right? Bow hunting is more of a solo thing than a group, you know, part, right? I don't want to say party, but like a tradition event, like a rifle season would be. So kind of talk to me a little bit about how you grew up and how that you were involved with that family oriented tradition.
Yeah. So, you know, for us, it was, I've literally been deer hunting and got the pictures of me since I was just, you know, a little kid, 3 years old. My dad was taking me out and going hunting and going to the camp and that kind of stuff. And even like my grandparents lived on a dairy farm in Southwest Wisconsin. And like for Thanksgiving, you know, Wisconsin's gun season was over Thanksgiving. So it's like all my uncles and all of us, we'd all go down to grandma's farm for Thanksgiving. And part of that was going deer hunting. And, you know, I wasn't old enough to carry a gun, but I'd go with, and I had a big knife that I always wore on my belt and got to sit with my dad and kind of grew up doing that stuff. And it was really all about gun season, you know, when I was growing up. My dad had bow hunted a little bit, I think, before I was even born. And, you know, it wasn't until later that I started bow hunting, but, you know, the deer camps and the family stuff like that, that's what it was all about. I don't remember anybody ever even really getting a real nice buck until I think my dad shot a nice one probably in like the 90s, you know, and that was about it. It was just more about family and being there and the food and, you know, just kind of being together and that kind of stuff, more so than even the hunting or anything like it is nowadays, you know?
Yeah. When do you think, if you were to just take a guess on when, you know, people started in that, in your camp or in your little gun season tradition that you're doing, when did people start actually talking about big antlers? I mean, was it, because it sounds to me like you guys were part of a it's brown, it's down type club, and then later on is when people started talking about big antlers, like maybe we should let this one go, maybe we shouldn't. Talk to us a little bit about that and maybe what some of those conversations were like.
Yeah, I mean, for our group, the big buck thing was probably my fault, to be honest. Like, so, you know, my dad, even to this day, like, he still loves to shoot deer, and whatever he shoots, I could honestly probably care less. And same for my brother, because it's just the three of us now, left of our group, I guess, because people have gotten old and passed on and whatnot. But, you know, I've always thought that I was going to work in the outdoor industry. I always thought I went to college for natural resources and just kind of thought I'd do something like that. And I ended up actually working for a retailer, Cabela's in southern Minnesota. And down there is where I kind of really gained the big buck craze, because there's big bucks down there in bluff country. And, you know, started looking for a place to hunt down there, got a lease down there. And it was, they had an actual law. It was the antler point restriction law, where it had to be 4 points to a side or more for it to even be legal to shoot. And so it was kind of like, okay, well, then I started, you know, going after bigger bucks. And I think I shot like 115-inch 11-point buck or something one year. And from then on, I was hooked. And then that sort of like transferred on to our group. And, you know, I think it's always like you got to get that first one under your belt before it's easier to wait for a big buck. Because a lot of times it's a matter of just having the patience. You know what I mean? And hunting in the right areas, I guess. And we were definitely in the right areas once we started hunting down there.
Yeah. Yeah. So was it hard for certain people in your group to do that? To all of a sudden, you know, for years and years and years, they were shooting whatever they wanted to. Now there has to be some kind of consideration where like, you know, maybe I should start shooting, like, I don't know, passing some of the four corns that I've been shooting over the years.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, you got to remember around that time, this would have been maybe early 2000s in that era. And so trail cameras were kind of just becoming a thing. And with me, you know, working in the outdoor retail, I of course was on top of the latest, greatest equipment always. And so I had gotten a couple trail cameras at that time, like the old ones where you had to put the big, you know,
batteries
in
it,
Duracell battery in there, yep. And stuff. Yeah. And so as soon as it was like, cause like for us, we don't live where we hunt. So it's not like I see a big buck out in the backyard. It's like, I'd be up there doing work. Well, you're not going to see the big bucks then a lot of the times. And so finally when we had the cameras, I was like, hey, there is nice deer around here. Maybe we should wait for that buck, or maybe we're doing the right types of things to our land, and now we're getting those type of deer. So I think trail cameras was a big part of it. You know, that was around the time that I think the social media stuff was kind of starting. It was just, you were more, do I want to say, like, pressured into hunting big bucks and trying to pass the smaller ones. And that's when it, at that time, I think it was looked down upon, or beginning to be the era where it was looked down upon to even just kind of hunt brown. It was down, or even do deer drives, for God, you know, God's sakes, or something like that. It was just, there was a big change, I think, in the hunting industry.
A little more
time.
Judgment from people.
Yeah.
Huh.
For sure. And I fell into it hard, you know, because here I am hunting a antler point restriction. I'm in Houston County, Minnesota, which is, you know, prime habitat. I had the deer there. So it was like, I almost felt the pressure to try to shoot those bigger bucks and get the people that were hunting with me to shoot them as well. And of course, looking back now, I'm like, I think we would have had a lot more enjoyable seasons back then if we would have just shot a legal buck,
yeah.
You know, and just enjoyed it more.
Yeah. You know, I think that's a really good message that everybody really needs to hear. And I think that a lot of people, especially new hunters, you know, I mean, but it's hard for me to talk about this because I'm guilty of it too, right? I'm
yeah.
going after older age class deer. I'm going after, I guess you would say sometimes big antlered deer. And I'm kind of a hypocrite, but I think at the same time, if people are frustrated with not being able to get something that may seem unattainable or is unattainable from the part of the country that you hunt, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with filling your tag with any legal deer. Any legal deer. It could be a fawn, a button buck, a spike buck, whatever. If it makes you happy, man, that's something that I think a lot more people need to preach.
For sure. And I think this is the hardest part too, and I think social media is probably the biggest problem with this, but you need to compare yourself with people that hunt in the areas you hunt in. So like, okay, you're in Iowa. I look at your deer and you might be like, oh, it's okay. I was hoping for something better. And then I got this one, he's mature, but like, it'd be like one of the biggest deer I ever shot, you know? Right. And people who hunt northern Minnesota look at what I shoot and they're like, oh my gosh, you shoot giant deer. And I'm like feeling guilty that I shot a 4-year-old, you know, 140, and I probably should have shot a 5-year-old 160 or something. You know, it's just, yeah. I think it's too easy to look on social media and get that instant, like, we say it all the time, but like, you scroll through 1,000 deer pictures, and like, I find myself guilty of this, like sitting here going, well, dang it, look at that deer, but you don't realize how some of these people shoot them, and like, you know, what, if they're even hunting them as ethically, let's say, some of these people, or if, you know, the amount of work that they did put into it. I mean, some people work very hard to shoot nice bucks. Some people get lucky. Like, there's just so many variables that you can't see when you're just looking at an Instagram story.
Right. A lot of context of a picture that's typically left out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And then, like, I think nowadays it's funny because I'll look and, like, I used to be embarrassed by shooting like not a big deer. Well, now I feel like I'll shoot like a nice mature, like 4-year-old buck. And it's almost like I'll feel guilty because I feel like I've gotten to a point where I can almost can get a nice buck every year. I put my time in more than maybe even a lot of people, and I've, you know, figured out some stuff, but it's like, I've gotten to a point where I almost feel bad showing people like, oh, I shot another deer that I'm going to shoulder mount and put in my basement. Like, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
It's not as easy as it seems. Like, you really got to compare yourself to people that are hunting on your level. And then to that matter, it's okay not to hunt at the top level. Like, it's okay to be a hunter and to just hunt for the meat and in the enjoyment and stuff like that. And like I said, but I am hypocritical because I don't want those to be my neighbors or in my party either. So it's a touchy situation.
Yeah. So here's what I always tell people, I love my wife to death, but she always compares herself to other women, and she compares her, like, what we have as a family to what other people have as families. And everybody's different, right? Everybody has different scenarios that they come from, whether it's hunting or whether it's life in general. And in my personal life, and I'm going to apologize for the swearing up front, but I have adopted the zero fucks given policy where I don't care what other people think about me. And I don't judge other people, or I try not to. I try not to judge other people. And coming back to the deer hunting thing, if I see a spike or if I see a Boone and Crockett, I always tell that person, dude, congratulations, or dudette, whatever.
Yeah.
Congratulations on a great deer, because that's what we need more of. We shouldn't give love just because the antlers are big. We should give love because people are out there hunting, man.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I was super, like, I fell hard this year. So it's been my lifelong goal to own my own property. And I worked really hard. I drive a crappy old rusty Suburban. I go without a lot of things. I worked really hard to buy my own property. Okay. So I get this hunting property, I get my cameras out, I have an absolute giant of a deer, 200-inch deer show up on my property, and I've never wanted one specific deer so bad. I've always had like a few target bucks, and you know, it was great to get one. I wanted this deer. It was a big non-typical. It was the first year of owning my own hunting property. I had this deer completely dialed in, and I ended up having to leave for a work trip when we got a nice cold front, right, 2 weeks before gun season this year. And then I came back, I hunted him, the neighbor ended up shooting him during gun season, and it took everything in me to try to be excited for that guy.
Hey, that's human nature, man. I tell you what, I chased a 200-inch deer. Well, he wasn't 200 every year, but for two, yeah. I think it was like 170. Then he disappeared for a year, and I had a picture of him one time in the summer. I'm guessing somewhere around the 180s. Then he was a 190, and then 2 years for 200, and then that last year, the neighbor shot him. And I put a lot of time and energy. I passed a lot of deer that I had never shot before, and ended up the neighbor shot him. So here's the other story is I hit that deer when he was about 210 inches, and just like a crazy story about maybe aiming a little too high. I hit him in the spine. I was shooting a mechanical, I feel that my arrow wasn't heavy enough. Cause that was before the heavy arrow craze that everybody's going through right now. Right. I feel that if I had a fixed blade or the same broadhead, but with a heavy arrow, like a really heavy arrow behind it, I probably would have spined him and he would have dropped right in front of me. But, he hit him. He made it through. I got him on trail camera pictures looking pretty healthy in February. And the next year he came back as a 200 incher and then the neighbor shot him. And there was a moment there where just like you, I was like, oh shit. Like I wanted that deer so bad. And I was just getting ready to take my 2 week November vacation, but it was a late October cold front. And the guy ended up putting his stand in the right spot. And I know this guy and I know his family. He's a great guy. So I wished him, I told him congratulations, but he went out of his way to call me and tell me, hey man, I got this deer on the ground. And, so I was happy for, I was happy for him, but that's a tough thing to do, especially when, maybe subconsciously we all think that we deserve something that we really don't deserve.
Yeah, and that was the thing. It's like I had bought this property. I had gotten a picture of that deer the year before, and it was like part of the reason I even wanted this property so bad is, and he was only like a 150, 160 the year before, and he just exploded with all these extra points. And then I had him so dialed, like to the point where I already had the spot picked out in my house type of thing. Like it was pathetic. I mean, this deer, it like for whatever reason, he'd bed next to my pole shed. He would walk 60 yards from my pole shed every morning and every night. And then I went there when the wind was right. Everything was exactly like it should have happened. Every noise that I heard that night in the stand, I was just sick to my stomach because I just knew it was him coming. And then I proceeded to sit there 5 days, sun up to sundown, never seen him. And then the neighbor's wife actually filmed him in a field a quarter mile up the road from me, and he was chasing a doe. And it was like, for whatever reason, I knew in my head at that moment, like that deer was gone. Like he wasn't coming back. Gun season was a day away. And then I found out later on, like I didn't even like, it wasn't like the neighbor called me. Like I just found out kind of through the grapevine and then seen the pictures where the guy had killed it. And they're the type of people where they don't really do anything. Like they got a huge party and they go do like drives, sit in a stand for a little while in the afternoon, shoot whatever goes by and just happen to shoot that deer.
Yeah.
And it was like exactly like you said, like I felt more deserving of that deer, but at the end of the day, like we don't own the deer. It's not my deer. Like he had just as much right to it as I did. It just, sometimes it's hard to take those ones.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. You're right. And that's happened multiple years for me, especially when, you share a farm with somebody. Like I now keep in communication better with some of the guys that hunt the same farm as me, but at the same time, I don't go out of my way and share trail camera pictures with them. Sometimes I do, but not really. Yeah. So for the most part, all we do is, we just communicate like, hey, I caught a trespasser on camera, you know, or hey, I had this on camera, or hey, I got some camera stolen. Have you had any issues? Or, you know, hey, just want to let you know I shot this deer. And he, you know, he's done that with me a couple times as well. So it's good to have that type of communication, with people that you're sharing the property with, or neighboring properties. 'Cause, you know, especially on a 200 inch deer like that, when you've made up your mind that that's the only thing that you want to shoot, and then he disappears, and guess what you're doing? You're out there still hunting for him. You don't know he's dead, but you're still hunting for him. You still hunt for him. And then, you know, it would be nice to know whether or not a buck like that is still alive from a, you know, just a text. Hey, just want to let you know I got him, because that would ultimately change the strategy for the rest of the season.
And it did. Like, luckily, I had found out that deer was gone, and I moved on to the second, third, fourth deer I was after, and I did end up shooting a deer. So, like, I mean, it would have been one of, like, it was great to shoot a nice, mature buck off my property the very first year I owned it. If I hadn't heard that buck was dead, I probably never would have shot a deer this year, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's nuts. Let me ask you this question. So, you're like me, right? I'm not a guy of flair. I don't like to, you know, buy a lot of things. Except maybe some deer hunting related stuff. I do spend a little bit of my hard earned money on some traveling, you know, just some traveling. But when it comes to my truck, my house, you know, some other expenses throughout life, I keep it pretty meager, with the ultimate goal of doing what you did, and trying to buy some land someday. So talk to me a little bit about the feeling that you got when you signed your name on the piece of paper, and now you went from not being a landowner to now being a landowner.
You know, it's one of those things that, so I've always had a lease. I hunted state land. I hunted by permission, and, like, we all know how much that sucks. Like, even I had a lease with one of the greatest farmers you could ever ask for, but it's like, at the end of the day, anything you do to that property, anything you put into it, there's just the chance that someone's going to come along and offer more money, or he retires or moves. Like, there's just always was this idea that it's not mine. I can't do what I want to it. You know what I mean? And so, like, finally owning land, it's like if you're like me, where it's your biggest end goal, it's by far the greatest feeling ever that you could ever have, besides, you know, my two daughters and that stuff. Like, finally signing papers and owning land was the greatest thing that's ever happened, I feel like. And then to have a 200 inch buck on it the first year I owned it was kind of icing on the cake, you know, especially in Minnesota. And it was absolutely awesome. But then it's kind of like, you do all the work, you find the property, you finally owned it. But then it was like a little bit of stress, because you're like, okay, I'm young. And then bam, COVID hit. I'm a sales guy. Like, people buy fish finders when they have extra money and they can, you know, go fishing and do hobbies. But when COVID came and it was like the economy was kind of uncertain, like, there was some scary times there for sure.
So let me ask you this, just kind of on that topic real quick. I know, speaking to a lot of companies within the hunting industry, 2020 was an exceptional year for a lot of hunting companies, and they were making a ton more money than what they were used to. And I think a lot of it has to do with forcing people outside and getting them to buy license and hunt again. Did that carry over into the fishing industry as well, especially on a high dollar item like Garmin electronics?
Absolutely. I mean, the product availability is really tough right now. There's no boats. Like, you try to go buy a new boat, there's nothing out there. Everybody, you know, when there was no sports, there was no going to Canada, there was none of this stuff. People just started going, okay, what can I do? I can get into the outdoors. And so bass fishing, you know, leagues with the high school, like, stuff like that was still able to go on, because you're kind of like socially distanced, but able to get in the outdoors. And that is carried on. I mean, I travel a lot for work, obviously, and the amount of traffic where people are hooked up to boats, campers, four-wheelers, side-by-sides, tractors, just everything related to the outdoors is more than I've ever seen in my whole life. I don't know one company or major retailer that I work with that isn't, you know, having a banner year. And I think it's, you know, just a result of that. I mean, every state that I know of had an increase in fishing license. Every state.
Yeah. Yep. And I think it's the same way with hunting license as well. They just kind of, hey, let's get outside. Let's go do this. And to be honest with you, hopefully it carries over not only for the industry side, but just for getting more people, you know, introduced to the outdoors as well.
For sure. And I think there's been a lot of talk of that. I've heard a lot of, you know, from the state departments and stuff like that, where like, okay, we've got these people, but now when soccer and, you know, going, being able to go back to whatever video games or whatever it was people did before, like, how do we retain these people and keep them in the outdoors and continue to have them? Because, I mean, we all know, anybody who's into hunting and fishing, we all know we need those numbers. We need those people. We need people to stand up and support our industry and what we do. And so there's nothing better than new young people getting into it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you look at the average age of a deer hunter nowadays, and it's up there. I want to say last time I looked, it was in the 40s, 50s, somewhere in there. Well, what are we going to do when those guys are 80s and or no longer with us? I mean, we need to keep it going. You know what I mean? So
that time's very quickly approaching. Let me get back to your property a second. So how many acres did you buy?
So I bought 80 acres.
80 acres.
Which I know isn't a ton, but, it's completely wooded. I'll kind of give you the setup of it. So it's completely wooded. It's got a 5-acre food plot that was kind of already established right dead center in the middle. So, like, right in the middle of the 240s, essentially. Across the whole northern boundary of it is a road or like a driveway. It was an old county road from way, way back in the day. So there's good access from that side. I'm surrounded by Big Ag, and I've got all woods with a little food plot. But what kind of made it happen for me, I was thinking I'd get like 20 acres to 40 acres, something like that. You know what I mean? And we were looking, and then my wife seen this place, and it had a cabin. It has a shower. It has a toilet. Has electricity. It had a pole shed, and it was like, okay, this is something that like we can go do as a family. And maybe during that COVID time frame, it just was even more relevant. You know what I mean? So we kind of looked at those features and made it work. You know what I mean? Just because we knew it'd be something that would be good for the whole family, not just something that I would enjoy for deer hunting only.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And I think that here in Iowa, man, prices are so out of control right now when it comes to hunting ground. And here's what it has to fit my budget. There can be zero ag on it because that just jacks the price up. Honestly, I feel like if I'm going to get a good price on a piece of property, I have to buy it directly from a landowner before it starts getting marketed, you know, through some of these whitetail land companies that are out there. Because the second that you start posting pictures of big deer on trail camera or on those listings, like, the price is just automatically bumped up. And
for sure.
Yeah. So I'm basically looking at something that is more location or terrain feature based and not necessarily any ag at all. Something that can't be developed at all. So basically scrub ground is what I'm getting at. And that's, you know, and that's where the deer live, which is awesome. So hopefully I can find a piece like that. I've been doing some research, and I'm hoping that if all things go well financially within the next, 5 years, I can find 20, 15, you know, something, just something to get my feet in the land ownership game. So I don't know.
Well, and so that's the other thing. Like, when you're looking at land, and like, obviously, I guess I didn't necessarily go this route. But the thing is like, you don't have to buy your end goal. And I think that's what a lot of people sometimes will get stuck on. Yeah. And so, like, I bought this land with 80 acres, but it's land is never going to go down in value. It's always going to go up, and there's never going to be more land. Like, I bought this. I can make some improvements to it. I improved, you know, a couple of stands, food plots, put in some trails. I could sell it for, you know, a profit now and buy more land. And so, like, you can start off with 10 acres as long as it has, like, a nice feature. I've hunted a bunch of 10-acre plots close to the Twin Cities that were amazing deer hunting. You know, they had just had a nice swamp or something on them. And then you do something to it, you sell it. Like, there's steps. I mean, you look at the guys, like, the big guys out there, even the big guys in Iowa, like Winky and Lakoski's and Juries, like, they didn't start with what they have right now. Like, it's okay to get something, do the right improvements at, you know, wisely without putting too much money into them and making money and going into the next property, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So what's your short-term goals on this new piece?
Well, it had, like, all woods, basically, and so adding some food to it, but I'm surrounded by a big egg. So, like, my property is one of these properties where I have the deer that they live on my property, and then at night they leave the property and they go to the big egg, which is a hard piece of property to find, but it's a property that you want, because you want the deer to be on your property, especially gun season comes along and they're spooked. They all run to my land because I'm completely wooded, other than like where the cabin is and the little food plot, where everything around me is big bean fields, corn fields, that kind of stuff. And so continuing to keep it covered, keeping new, you know, regen going, like, it was logged off not that long ago, but I did a big hinge cut project this year where, you know, I cut down a bunch of these big, you know, trees that would have had value to a forester, someone looking to maybe log the property, but to me, they were not helping my deer hunting. So I went in and dropped some of those, and you can already see the results. I've got, you know, a bunch of bucks kind of summering where that hinge cut is. I put in some more smaller food plots to kind of give them those, you know, first feeding type of food plots, you know, before they head out to those big egg fields. So kind of doing that. The cabin needs some work, so just some paint and some elbow grease and stuff like that to continue to do that. And, you know, my goal is to just add property to it in the future. Even if I could find another 80 acres that's down the road a mile or something like that, I think that's kind of my end goal.
Gotcha. So short term is just improve the habitat to get deer feeling more comfortable, you know, throughout the entire season, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And then with an end game of picking up either bordering properties or something within that same area.
Yep. For sure. And that's the thing, like, small properties, there's a ton of stuff you can do to make a small property more desirable or to hunt better, you know, from hinge cut lines to small water holes. I mean, there's so many property management stuff you can do to even, like, a 20 acre piece to, you know, make it more desirable to kill a buck on.
Yeah. So how far are you from the Iowa border on that piece? Or wait, no, that's the central Minnesota piece, right?
Yeah, that's the central Minnesota piece. So my lease in southeast Minnesota, I mean, I'm probably 20 minutes from Iowa and 30 minutes from Wisconsin. I mean, I'm right down in the corner, right by the Mississippi River and that bluff country stuff.
Yeah.
And that piece is different. So, like, I could put in a food plot, but there's food everywhere. Like, how would I compete with standing corn that's there every year during deer season? You know what I mean? And
yeah.
So with that piece, I've just done trying to do more, like, I guess just scouting and kind of understanding the bucks. And that hunt's totally different. So central Minnesota's flat. I have no real elevation. Southeast Minnesota is a completely different animal. And being a guy from central Minnesota that started to hunt bluff country, I didn't kill crap for like the first 5 years I was there. I thought you needed to be in the bottom. Then I thought you needed to be in the top. Then I thought you needed to hunt the edge of field. Like, I'd never been able to hunt close to field. So I was like, oh, great. I'd hunt the edge of a cornfield. And I'd see all these fawns and does and spikes, but I'd never seen nice bucks. And it was really not until later that I started to, like, just watch deer and realize, like, hey, the Bucks seem to like to be about a quarter of the way down the hill, and you can't skyline yourself, and there's thermals and all that stuff that comes with hunting bluff country. That is just like, it's a totally different deer that lives in bluff country than what lives in the flat grounds.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Before we get into this next question, actually, I want to ask you this. Now that you're a landowner, how many tags do you get in a year for whitetails?
So in the state of Minnesota, so this is just the general license, state of Minnesota, you get one buck, okay? And then based on where you are in the state, you're able to get like 1, 2, 3 doe tags. So like on my farm, central Minnesota land that I own, I'm allowed one buck. But I could party hunt there. So technically, my dad could shoot my buck or something like that. But then where my lease is in southeast Minnesota, it's a chronic wasting zone. So you're actually allowed one buck per season. So one archery buck, one gun buck, one muzzleloader buck, and unlimited does.
Yeah. Okay. So one archery, one gun buck, which is rifle or muzzleloader, right?
Down there, it's shotgun only.
Shotgun only. So essentially, you could kill three bucks or two bucks.
So I could kill three bucks total. So I could kill, let's say I killed my bow buck in central Minnesota. I could go down south to my lease and kill one then with a shotgun and one with a muzzleloader.
Okay, I gotcha. So
or all three in the south or whatever, but yeah.
All right. Does Minnesota have landowner tags?
No.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's where for me being a landowner becomes like awesome, because if I buy a piece of property, I get an extra landowner tag, and I can use that tag really in any season I want, but I would definitely use it for archery season. So I could get two archery bucks in a year, and man, I'll tell you right now, that would be money. You would hear me sing from the rafters. Like, I would be so happy to get a second whitetail tag.
See, I'm lucky because I have the southeast. So like I have the chronic wasting thing, but like people buy me, let's say in central Minnesota where it's one buck. If you're in Minnesota, you wish you could get two, but then you talk to guys from Wisconsin and then they all wish it was only one buck there. But it's like, they should allow, it'd be cool to get two with a bow. Like, I can see one with a gun, but if you could get, like, two with a bow, that would be so awesome. It really would, especially for people like me where I've got 5 or 6 different places I hunt spread around the state, you know. And if I killed something on my land up north or down south, I could then hunt some of my Twin Cities stuff. Like, I just want to keep hunting. I don't want to be done, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. So on that southeast Iowa piece, southeast Minnesota piece, where you're 20 minutes from Iowa, just out of curiosity, how good is the hunting there? Because one of the best counties in Iowa is the furthest northeast county that there is. And and so I was just curious if it carries over into Minnesota.
It definitely does, but you guys have better management of your whitetails in Iowa. You've got a later gun season. We have the chronic wasting disease seasons now. So like previous to chronic wasting zone seasons, it was great hunting. It was nothing to hear of a 200 inch whitetail or a 170 or 180 killed. I mean, I've killed 170s down there, and I'm not even on the best of this stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like it was amazing. It had to be 4 points to a side. Well, as soon as you do that for 2-3 years, people start to see the benefit of, hey, we're passing these 2-year-old bucks. Now look at these threes. Oh my gosh. Now we got fours and fives, and the hunting was great. But then with chronic wasting zone seasons and stuff like that, the hunting is definitely going downhill down there, but it's still good. I mean, you look at central Minnesota where there's big parties of hunters and stuff like that, we have great deer. It's just, if you live in an area that has good, you know, habitat for whitetails, you're going to have good deer. But then when you throw that management on top of it, it's just even better. So southeast is good. I mean, I've I've been lucky enough to get a 170, some 150s, stuff like that down there. And like I said, you go just south of where I'm at into the Good Valleys. And I mean, those guys are killing 200s yearly down there.
Yeah, that's crazy. So sounds like you got your hands full, man. I mean, you got in a good way, right? I mean, you got options, you got property up where you live, you got property that you own, you got a lease down on the southeast side of the state. So, you know, like when it, now you have all these things and you've had a big fat mature buck on the property that you've owned, what are your goals going into every season or to this upcoming season?
I got two daughters that are 10 and 8. And they absolutely love coming up there with me. And so I'm a traveling salesman. I'm gone a lot. I fly a lot. I drive a lot. I spend way too many nights in a hotel every year. So like with this COVID stuff last year, getting to go up north with my daughters, and like maybe they'll never shoot a deer, but they really love checking cameras. They love filling the water holes, watering the apple trees, planting the food plots, just anything like that. Shed hunting. They had a blast of shed hunting this spring. So for me, it's just all about, you know, going up there and just getting experiences and time with my family, like even probably more so than shooting a nice buck, which is, you know, maybe crazy to say, but I mean, like I had a ton of fun with them last year. I took them bow hunting a couple of times and like we seen some deer and they were so excited. Kind of reminded me of when I was a kid, I guess, and I was just excited to see deer and be with my dad when he was hunting. Even if we didn't get something, it was fun, and I think it kind of helped to ground me to, you know, remind me like, hey, I'm out here enjoying this, and like they're having fun whether I shoot a mature buck or not.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, man, now I'm starting to get fired up for the upcoming season because I think I'm going to spend early season or in that money weather time frame where it's not too hot but it's not too cold of mid-October, where I think I'm going to be able to get some tree stand time in with my daughter. And I'll tell you right now, I'm looking forward to starting that with her and my oldest son, and then obviously for personal reasons getting into that, dude, just getting into that rotation or just getting into that rut, like, man, and checking trail cameras and all that stuff. Like I still have all that stuff to do, and I'm starting to get fired up for it.
Exactly. Well, it's like, I mean, all the work, like people that are, you know, your weekend warrior deer hunters, or they're like, they just get into it for gun season. And then there's people, I feel like kind of like me and you, where every day I wake up and I think about something deer hunting and I have a running list on my phone of like, hey, I need to save up and get one more trail camera for that, you know, spot. I need to stop and pick up some more minerals. I need to, you know, hopefully get my bow here pretty soon because they're way behind on shipping bows. Like just all of this deer stuff and like all of the tractor work that needs to be done. Like there's so much. So when it's finally time to just hunt, it's almost relaxing in a way. And yeah, like all of that work is finally, you know, going to pay off, you know?
Yeah. Couldn't agree with you more, man. Well, I'll tell you this. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and talk whitetails with me and us here. And let me be the first to say good luck this upcoming season, man. Hopefully everything pays off.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you too. I mean, we're going to have a good season. We had an easy winter. We've got a nice hot summer starting off here. So I think the deer are going to do some growing for us.
And that wraps up today's episode, man. Huge shout out to Danny for taking time out of his day to get this done. Huge shout out to each and every one of you. Not only do I want to thank you for listening to today's episode, but I want to thank you for like just growing with the Nine Finger Chronicles, growing with the Sportsman's Nation. And if you feel that there's someone out there who could benefit from this podcast, dude, do me a favor and start sharing it. You know, share stuff on social about the podcast and tag me in it, and I share all that stuff. So make sure you guys are tagging me, the Nine Finger Chronicles, in any social posts, and I'll do my due diligence to try to get it shared I do it mostly through Instagram stories, but there's other ways to share as well. If you have a cool story or you want to be a guest on the podcast, hit me up through Instagram or Facebook. And huge shout out to the partners of the podcast, man. We're talking about Exodus. We're talking about Wasp. We're talking about Hunt Stand, Lone Wolf, Vortex. You know, so that's Wasp, Vortex, Hunt Stand, Ozonics, Lone Wolf, Exodus. Please go out and support those companies that support this podcast. And if you're going to be in a tree, wear your damn safety harness, because I just had a guy tell me the other day that I don't say that anymore. So there, I said it. And that's it. Have a good weekend. Good vibes in, good vibes out, and we'll see you next week. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.